Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangham. Namassami itto parang sakkhajjang dhammo sotapotti. So, good evening. I'm very honored, feel very honored to be able to give some reflections tonight, a little bit to contemplate for us, having come here to spend a Sunday evening in a quiet, contemplative way. And the theme I thought of talking about is this very poignant wisdom teachings that we know from Ajahn Chah and of course also from the Buddha. And I've just been listening to a little bit of Ajahn Chah. Luckily, I'm here now. I got some spare time and I can easily kind of just pick any random talk and then feel inspired by it, because the Dhamma that we know from Ajahn Chah is very direct and very simple in many ways. Yet it's also very, very deep. It touches the right points, I believe. And one of the talks that I found was about, in Thai, it's very poignant, very simple. It's like, in Thai, it says, Thuk Pro Kit Pit. It means like something like, we suffer because we think wrongly. Suffering comes from wrong thinking, and the word thinking, in one way, already opens up a bit of a debate. What does he actually mean with it? But like the point that he's making in the talk is, we set ourselves up for trouble through the attachments, through the identification, through not being able to let go, through a wrong attitude in our mind. When we meet things, problems in life, we don't really get it that we can let go and simply be at peace with things, but we make a big fuss about it. A lot of stories and a lot of like justifications, a lot of wishes for the situation to be otherwise. So we're setting ourselves up for trouble, and that's engraved in those four words, Thuk Pro Kit Pit. I mean, we suffer because we don't get it, basically. And a lot of the training as monks are, I believe, in the time of Lungpa Munindo, when he was with Ajahn Chah, was particularly aiming at stimulating that sense of frustration and getting the various people from various countries to react in a way where they can then actually see how they increase the suffering through taking the situation wrongly, or taking it in a silly way, one can say, like in a like unenlightened way. And in the particular talk that I listened to, Lompa Cha is talking about somebody who's got a lot of difficulties mentally and feels frustrated and feels like, say, at the end of her, it's a nun, and at the end of her, like tether somehow in being able to take it, and is blaming it on herself. And Lompa Cha basically says, you're thinking wrongly. There's nothing really here that you need to get upset about. You practice letting go and don't see yourself as that important in that sense. So we all know these teachings in many ways, like not identifying, not taking ourselves too important, not to being so much like obsessed with our justifications and our stories about why is this and why shouldn't it be otherwise, and all these things we train ourselves in seeing and reacting more skillfully to when we face real life problems. So then I was thinking, yeah, Ajahn Chah's teachings, many times they are very, very precise little pointers at very high wisdom or realization. And obviously we can't just copy that, we can't just take these things and pretend that we have understood them. It really has to come from the heart that we get this effect that we think, wow, this is really true, or like we have a reaction that is so silly that we afterwards we laugh about ourselves and think, next time, rather not, next time I can let go, next time I don't have to be upset or so. So it's a certain type of practical wisdom, I would say, that we many times like to cultivate in our sangha, in our monasteries, in our life, something that is not really like programmable. We can't really put up a code for this, if this, then that, and so forth. We cannot really induce it. It has to be ready to come to this point that we can let go or can see things in a different light. So it takes a lot of experience, I believe. But yet, classically, in our daily routine, we have studies, we have like ways of reflecting on the teachings, and also we listen to Dhamma talks, even by Ajahn Chah, and get inspired by it. So there is a feedback that we get from the from hearing the teachings and from taking them in to a certain level and then working with them. And in classic Buddhist terminology, this is called the first level is of developing wisdom. In that sense, it's called Suttamaya Panya, which is like the wisdom, panya, that arises through hearing things. And it's very important, I believe, because we hear a lot of things that are not really wise teachings. They may be worldly things. We get a lot of data and input, which doesn't help us to overcome suffering. So at least if we listen to then some Dhamma talks and lend ear and observe like how it affects us, then we have a chance to take the path that is outlined and walk it. And so this is very different than the Buddha himself. The Buddha himself didn't have a teacher. He didn't have the chance to listen to the teachings. He was practicing more on that level of the second type of panya, second type of wisdom that we have in Buddhist teachings is the Cintamaya panya, which means the Dhamma by reflection or by using your own mind, looking at things and trying to figure things out and be able to make sense of processes or situations or even like one's inner reactions, to be able to observe and also use a little bit of the intelligence that we have to not repeat the same mistakes all the time and anticipate things and play things through, and obviously also listening then to the teachings and then contemplating them and processing them and making them into something that is applicable to ourselves. So this this reflective quality, or the quality of, in Thai we say picharana, like to be able to contemplate or look at things in a very, very say mature way. This is like the second level of panya, like where we use like our, so to say, our brain in one way. Like we think, for example, about life and the factors of life and old age, sickness, and we hear that somebody else maybe has got a very difficult health situation, like Ajahn Abhinando right now, and we contemplate and draw the conclusions for ourselves that we ourselves are in a similar situation. We see people around us suffer and we contemplate, we are the same, or we can even see the cows and the sheep and the lambs suffer here. And it doesn't take much of a, sophisticated approach and study to be able to to draw conclusions from that, but it comes from ourselves, so it comes from our own investigation, we can say. So this is the second level of practicing wisdom. And the third level is then obviously the real breakthrough wisdom, I would say, or the wisdom where it really clicks, and this is the bhavanamaya panya, the panya that comes from practicing. So when we actually really put ourselves in a situation where we are already letting go of many things and are just about on the merge of dropping another obstacle and working with ourselves and our limitations in order to reach that point where we have this tipping point where we can say, oh yeah, now something is coming together, which is also, of course, really not such an easy thing. We have to fine-tune it and many times maybe check again with instructions that we hear from somebody else or things that we make sense of already more in a theoretical way. We combine these things and eventually maybe then get a feeling of now I've understood something, now I know this, I'm not going to fall into the same trap again. It can also be a real heartfelt disposition that we train for ourselves, like Lompo Munindo many times stresses, like when we meet suffering, to really meet it, for example, and really feel it. And this is not something that we have to think about, but that we practice to be at that moment, that we're able to face frustration or face a sense of being, wrongly accused and wanting to rebel against it, and then really feel it, and then overcome it through the sense of recognition. Yeah, this is happening, and at some point, then once one knows this, then it doesn't have that strong effect anymore. That a feeling of letting go then can come. I was thinking about in Wat Pananachat in the monastery in Thailand where I live, basically, there's quite a lot of funerals happening. We have a cremation site, and I'm in the role of giving then reflections on the cremation, and obviously these are all Buddhist people and they've gone to the monastery many times since they're kids already, and most of them have a huge amount of dana barami. They come every morning and give little lumps of rice at least or more and on alms round and so forth. So they're intertwined with the monastery. Yet when talking about death on a funeral, there's so many different levels. And the other day I was really thinking, what can I do in order to have people not just listen to the Dhamma talk there and then develop, so to say, this copycat Sutamaya Panya, where you just kind of hear something and you can recite it, or how to get them at least to think somehow and reflect. And there's many ways of doing this. We can talk about samsara, for example, describe heaven and hell and the laws of karma. Yet it's something that is a bit we can infer by our experience now, this must be the case, this must be the law that drives the world or that drives rebirth and so forth, or understanding karma or understanding that there is most likely, according to the teachings of the Buddha, there must be another world, life isn't just ending now. So we can derive a certain amount of understanding and wisdom, that Chintamaya Panya, through reflecting on these teachings when we hear them. But what really would be the most beneficial sort of panya, sort of wisdom to be generated at a funeral would be a sense of letting go, deflating and letting the person that has died simply fare on to the next life, to the next destination, and not to fall into this clinging and this sorrow and this feeling of drama and tragedy and loss, and to overcome that feeling of it shouldn't be like this, for example. And how do we do this? You can see, as a teacher, as a good friend in the Dhamma, we try to give advice and the other person then just simply gets it as Sutta-maya Panyaya. He just listens to it, he or she, and just like hears it. And sometimes it sinks in, sometimes it doesn't. Then as a good teacher, for example, in school, you get the children, the students, to think. You try to provoke them with something that they really have to use their brain, and they solve a mathematical equation, so to say, because they really got it, how it works, and they're proud of it, and they feel like a sense of completion with that. But then, still on the emotional level, when it comes to a sense of depression, a sense of frustration, a sense of dukkha, as we say, or like anxiety, how do we really reach somebody? I believe it's a very long process, and we have to really work on it from many levels. I personally like chanting, for example, use a lot of chanting to bring back the teachings and try to reflect on them. That's then the Chintamaya Panya, like I use the teachings and then kind of try to keep them in mind, keep them alive. But when it really clicks or so, it many times needs certain inner dispositions to really go to the spirit of what the teachings are, not to the letter, not to the information, not to the logic, not to like mere like reasoning. So I could give a very good funeral talk, perfectly reasoned why people shouldn't be sad. It's like even in the chanting that we do at the funeral, and the Buddha says, what's the use of crying and being sad? The Buddha pointed out the way to do good actions, hold some actions. That's one of the chants that we do. And the insight has to come by the readiness of each person that hears the teachings and practices them. So the bhavana maya panya is something that takes time or comes more spontaneous or intuitive when things are ready. And it takes a certain humble attitude to know that actually, maybe I'm emotionally not ready to let go and to face dukkha, even though I have prepared myself with all the studies and all the input, the reading many times, or maybe these days it's also online media, I guess, that we kind of inform ourselves, but yet the capacity then to be at ease with old age, sickness, and death, or dukkha, also in daily life, is a very different thing. And I believe Ajahn Chah was very good in poking at the monks at that time, which unfortunately I wasn't part of that thriving community at that time. And Ajahn Chah, listening to him, he's very good at poking at people and just provoking that sense of you gotta get let go now. You have to surrender now. You can't argue anymore. I believe a real good charismatic teacher can maybe induce that sense of surrender with the students. Yet the real surrender has to come by ourselves. It has to come by a feeling of, now I can just let go. I can just be happy even though things are difficult. And also in the time of the Buddha, there was many spontaneous breakthroughs in terms of the disciples of the Buddha reaching the fruits of the practice through very unexpected processes. For example, on alms round, just getting a little one line of teaching, and it clicked. For example, for Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahamoggallana, they benefited from a single line on alms round and became stream enterers then. And the readiness to take that that wisdom teaching into the heart must have been there in many, many ways, and the human perfection that is needed to be able to access this wisdom must have been already quite ripe. Or like there's Venu Bahia, he has this very beautiful teaching, in the seen there's only the seen, and in the heard there's only the heard, and the thought there's only the thought. So these are very, very high teachings which we can quote now, 2,000 years later, but still, how would they affect us? We have to carry them around maybe a while, but keep them alive or enrich them with our own flavor. And I also think that's fun in many ways, like that contemplating aspect where we try to kind of bring the teachings alive and make them some heart, get some heart quality, some heartfelt feelings towards them. That's also, yeah, kind of fun to be able to, for example, cheer somebody up through maybe not the most sensible advice, but like emotionally really nice gestures, for example, being generous with one's time and feeling where the other person's at and then being able to respond to that. I think these are things that are actually rewarding for the practice. I was thinking one of the most famous suttas that in our circles gets quoted a lot is the Kalama Sutta. It's where the Buddha talks, don't believe this merely because of this. And you can subdivide the many factors that he names. Don't just merely believe this and this and that. But so like I'm saying, things that you've kind of taken on by hearsay against Sutta Maya Panya. You know, like it's not the real thing. You know, like things by tradition or by, you know, the customs or by the letters of the books and so forth. And then the second group in this Kalama Sutta is about like the things that are really coming from your own logic deduction, like by inference, by say philosophy that you develop. Like then, please don't believe that really. And then the last one is like by copying the guru and lying at the feet of the guru and taking his or her words then as the essence, so to say. And the Buddha then says, like, actually how you really arrive with wisdom is to knowing by yourself what are the things that are wholesome, unwholesome, and how to cultivate the wholesome things and abandon the unwholesome. And he talks about greed, hatred, and delusion, and brings it back to very, very tangible things, really knowing how to deal with things that are immediately emotionally happening. For example, the mind gets carried away with unwholesome thoughts. And the Buddha says, after saying, like, please, Kalamas, don't believe in all these like theories, but know by yourself how to abandon a thought of greed, a thought of hatred, and a thought of delusion. And then practice that which is like wholesome and the opposite, and then which is approved by the wise. It comes back a bit of a feedback, like also listening to the wise again, and it comes back as a support. Then practice that what is really you know as wholesome and know as beneficial, and what is approved by the wise, and it comes back in a package. And this is something then one can feel one has really understood. This is the teachings. This is the Dhamma. This is the Vinaya. And then it's not so much about the theory behind it. It's much more about the practical things again. How to abandon unwholesome thoughts. How to abandon things that are obstructions, like anger or like negative feelings, how to react to that. So it's very interesting to use one's mind in a way that directly addresses the liberating qualities of the Buddha's teachings, and try to find that when we do our studies, when we do our own logics about what is happening in our life, and then feed it back to the heart, I would say, to the feeling of like inside, to the feeling of, is this really leading myself to something wholesome, to something peaceful? Does it feel good? Does it feel something like that doesn't arouse any further, say, processes? Is it helping me to settle down, and is it helping to create a sense of peace and happiness in myself? So this is very mature way of Panya, and this, I believe, is the Bhavana Maya Panya that we're all dedicated to and try to keep alive. And if we are around skillful teachings, maybe through good friends in the Dhamma, or like in teachers like Ajahn Chah, who's pointing things out at us and steering our kilesas, our defilements, up a little bit, so that we rebel and then suddenly deflate, then we're very lucky. And we need to find these methods by ourselves, or the interactions, and come into a context that is alive in that sense, and not just simply look for them as information in the books. And luckily, like, I feel like that when listening to the talks by Ajahn Chah, I feel they're quite alive. And the feeling of the talks many times is that of like somebody really inspiring, having compassion with somebody who's suffering a lot. And I think then this could be me. And so I can actually fairly easy take the bridge to myself. And I wish all of you a similar experience in any kind that is suitable and that makes sense for you. We've all got different backgrounds, and obviously this approach of like listening to the teachings and taking them in, processing them, and bringing them to an intuitive sense of letting go and being inspired by them is not the same for everybody. But I think it's fun practicing in this way, being creative and not being just stuck with a certain program or stuck with a certain technique or a certain method, but keeping it alive. And I think we're quite fortunate to be in a tradition where it's not so much a pariyatti tradition, where there's so much talk about the theory. It's more like one where people poke at you and say, you got to do this and this, don't do that. And then we can watch our reactions to that and be at peace with it. Offer that for reflection tonight, and I would like to close my Dhamma talk now.